This episode is brought to you by HVR. Fresh data when you need it. More on that in a bit, but first, on with the show. Welcome to Deep Dive, a show where we discuss the biggest headlines to hit the startup scene with the journalists who broke the stories. My name's Nat, and today we're going to talk about the Silicon Valley fintech giant's foray into the Indonesian fintech space. I'm talking about the US's most valuable private company, Stripe. Over the past year, Stripe has been stepping up its efforts in its Indonesian entry, targeting key positions like legal counsel, key accounts manager, and expansion partnership lead for early hires. However, rolling out its core payment gateway business in the country will be no small feat. All the complex legal legwork that comes with being a foreign fintech aside, Stripe also has to contend with a number of ambitious local players who've recently received big capital injections in the fintech space. My colleague, Tech in Asia journalist Ardi Wardana, joins me for the story.
Yeah, thanks Ardi for taking the time to speak with me. Your story was about Stripe and its Indonesia efforts. So could you tell me, maybe let's start off with when exactly Stripe began looking to enter Indonesia?
Well, we don't really know for sure when they started to expand into Indonesia because they've been very quiet about their move in Indonesia. But what we do know is they hired a former Grab director, Ongki Kurniawan, as head of Indonesia in 2020, early 2020. So that's probably when it really kicked off in Indonesia. And since then, they've started recruiting other key positions, which I've noticed on LinkedIn and on their website, but they've been very under the radar with this. But from what I understand, they've actually started looking into Indonesia quite a few years before that. So they expanded into Southeast Asia in 2016, and the first market was Singapore, which is understandable because, you know, Singapore is the international hub, business hub in the region. So a lot of international companies set up their headquarters in Singapore. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it surprised me that they didn't go to Indonesia straight afterwards. It took them like 4 years to really start building a team in Indonesia. So that's where they're at right now.
Right, right. And, you know, before we talk about why it took them 4 years, I guess, to go from Singapore to Indonesia, what exactly about Indonesia makes it such an attractive opportunity for Stripe?
So Indonesia, of course, is the largest market in Southeast Asia, the huge population. And actually, it's usually for a lot of companies, international companies, it's usually the number one Southeast Asia market for them to expand. But what's interesting is Stripe first went to Singapore, and then the second market is not Indonesia, it's actually Malaysia. So Indonesia is the third market for Stripe. Yeah, and that's interesting because we would usually think of Indonesia as the main target. But yeah, it's taken quite a while for Stripe.
Right, right. And do you have any inkling as to why they decided to go to Malaysia first as opposed to going to Indonesia as number two?
Yeah, I did talk to a couple of industry people about this, and they tend to think that because it's one, because it's close to Singapore and probably it's easier to expand from Singapore to Malaysia. And also that it's very similar in terms of maybe socially, regulation-wise maybe, whereas Indonesia is a lot different. And maybe in terms of the way they use payment. So in Malaysia, the credit card penetration is larger than Indonesia. Indonesia is really low. So maybe that's also one of the reasons why they've taken the time to come to Indonesia.
Right, right. So I guess they took 4 years to come over from 2016 when they expanded into Southeast Asia with Singapore and then Malaysia and then finally Indonesia sometime last year.
Yep.
What, I guess, was the push for them to finally enter Indonesia? Did something happen? Was there an inciting event, I guess, that spurred them to finally step into Indonesia?
I'm not sure. Actually, it's what I would say is that looking at the growth of the payment market in Indonesia, online payment, the way that companies like OVO and GoPay has grown and Dana, they're sort of the measure of how the payment startup is growing in Indonesia. And they've all grown into unicorns. Dana, not there yet, but OVO and GoPay, definitely. So maybe looking at that, looking at how rapid the market is growing, maybe that sort of pushed them to maybe accelerate their move into Indonesia.
Right, right. And now it's been about a year, a little over a year since it entered Indonesia, right? So in that time, what has Stripe achieved so far in its Indonesia entry?
Well, so far they have a Bank Indonesia license. That's what we know. What license it is, we don't really know. So the Bank Indonesia website only specifies which companies are licensed and which are not. But it does categorize Stripe as a financial technology company. What that means, I'm not really sure. But all the other payment gateway companies are grouped under payment gateway. So I'm assuming that Stripe currently does not have the license to operate as a payment gateway, you know, their core business yet. So that's something they still need to work on, I think.
Right, right. And I guess, is there a reason why that they're not yet licensed to be a payment gateway, or is this a decision on their part?
So in the payments space is a very tightly regulated space in India. It's very stringent, the regulation. And especially for foreign companies, foreign investors. And I believe that's one of the biggest hurdles and will continue to be a big hurdle for Stripe going forward. So one of the latest regulations that came out, I did a story on this just last week. So the regulator, Bank Indonesia, they've capped the foreign ownership, foreign control for foreign investors in payment companies to 49%. So making sure that the majority of control of payment companies are with local investors. So that will make it extremely tough for any foreign companies that's looking to come to Indonesia and roll out their products in Indonesia, including Stripe. So for Stripe to have Stripe Indonesia operating in Indonesia, they'll have to sort of work around this regulation, maybe by appointing a nominee or setting up another company in Indonesia. But then, from what I understand from lawyers, is that the regulators are now more savvy. So they'll understand what these foreign players are doing and try to be more tight and more stringent, I think.
Right, right. So I guess just for those who might not be so familiar between the difference between being a licensed as a financial tech company versus being licensed as a payment gateway, could you just line out the differences in how that affects the operations of Stripe, for example?
This I'm not really sure. So part of this new regulation is that Bank Indonesia has simplified licensing. So in the past, there used to be different licenses for e-money issuers, e-wallet operators, payment gateway, fund transfer operators, but now they simplified it into one license. So even a lot of the players in the industry are still sort of figuring out what the different licenses are and what that allows them to do. So honestly, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm not completely sure.
Right. So it's something that the regulators are still trying to work out, and the players within the scene are also trying to work out with the regulators as well.
Correct. Yes.
We'll be right back. Have you ever wished that you could democratize your organization's data and enable more people across your company to move high volumes of critical operational data and empower faster decision-making to optimize your business? Well, you're in luck. HVR just announced the all-new HVR 6.0, which now allows you to incorporate real-time data movement into new and existing data management strategies, load massive tables much faster to speed up the adoption of new analytics systems, configure network encryption to make it secure by default, and dramatically simplify the deployment of initial data replication. The HVR platform is a reliable, secure, and scalable way to quickly and efficiently integrate large data volumes in complex environments, enabling real-time data updates, access, and analysis. Take a test drive of HVR 6.0 now by going to techin.asia/HVR6. Now, back to the show.
So there are a few other challenges that Stripe is facing in Indonesia, as you've written in your article, primarily, you know, to do with the increasingly crowded space that's being occupied by ambitious players who've recently accrued quite a bit of money, the payments business being quite a thin margin one. And could you explain, I guess, the challenges that Stripe will be facing in its expansion into Indonesia?
Yeah, so in terms of the crowded space, if you look at the Bank Indonesia data, under the payment gateway category, there's 24 companies in the space. So that's quite a lot. But of them, there's, I would say, 5 to 6 main like big players, including the likes of Doku, Zendit, which joined the Unicorn Club just a few weeks ago, and also Midtrans, which is owned by Gojek. So there are some of the big players. And all of them have, over the past year or two, have enjoyed a boom, if you like, because of a number of factors. One of them may be the rise of the tech ecosystem in Indonesia, a lot of players growing, a lot of companies that bring customers on into the ecosystem, and they enable online payment. And for online payment to take place on their platform, they need the likes of Zendit and Doku, all these payment gateway players. So all, you know, the big players, Traveloka, Gojek, Bukalapak, they all use these payment gateways. So once their transaction goes through the roof, the transactions of these payment gateways naturally also goes up.
Right.
So that's one. The second one is the past year, there's COVID, of course, COVID, which increased the adoption rate among not only consumers, but also SMEs. So everyone's paying online, transacting online, which also requires these payment gateways to help them perform the transactions. So those are the two drivers of the surge in payment gateway. And these are reflected by the increasing interest among venture capital in investing into these payment gateway startups. So Doku raised quite a big money earlier this year. Zendit raised 2 funding rounds in the space of 6 months. I think over 160 million in total. So yeah, and their valuation propelled them to the Unicorn Club. So yeah, it's growing rapidly. So that will be a challenge for Stripe, definitely.
Right, right. So I guess to interject before we go to the other challenges, but specifically to do with these increasingly heavy wallet players within Indonesia in the payment space, how will that affect Stripe's entry into the market or expansion into the market since they're already there? Because typically when you see incumbents, you know, like Stripe is coming into a market, they can typically outspend these smaller players. But will this be a particular problem for Stripe to be able to outspend these players?
So given that these players are themselves cash rich, they've raised millions of funding, I don't think they'll have, you know, too much trouble spending money and investing. So they would be able to compete with Stripe, I think, in terms of capital. But maybe Stripe does have the know-how. They have the experience of expanding into new markets, of teaming up with local players in those markets. So they do have that in their locker.
Right, right. So there's also the fact that the payments business is quite a thin margin business, right? Could you explain what exactly that means, I guess, and how this will impede Stripe and its efforts to expand in Indonesia?
So the payment space, both the front end and the back end, it's typically a thin margin business. Players typically earn their revenue from something called the MDR, which is the merchant discount rate, which is the fee charged onto merchants, which is very small. It's around 3% or less. And the rate varies between different payment methods. One example I used in my story was QR payment. So in Indonesia, the QR payment MDR rate is 0.7% of the transactions. That means payment companies get 0.7% of each transaction. That's how much they get. But even then, they have to split it into 4 or 5 different service operators that help with the payment process. So that's how small the margin is for the players.
Right, right. And that, I guess, would lead to potentially a lot of cash burning operations while it tries to get a strong foothold in the market.
Yes, exactly. And one founder told me that there's no way a payment gateway company can make money by relying solely on transaction fees. So like it or not, they'll have to build other products on top of the payment. A lot of different companies have built features like bookkeeping, inventory management, fraud detection loans to help them generate a more significant revenue because the transaction fees, they can't really count on it. So they've set up these additional businesses, but that would pit them against other established players in other verticals.
Right, right. So they would end up fighting a war on multiple fronts as opposed to just tackling one line of competitors.
Exactly, yes.
Right, right. Now, there's also something you wrote about how Indonesia is quite a bit different from most of the other markets that Stripe is in. And how that actually could be a potential challenge for Stripe. Could you explain a little bit about that difference and that challenge that they face?
Yeah, so if you look at the different markets that Stripe is in right now, most of them are European countries, and the ones in Asia are, I think, Hong Kong, Japan, Australia, New Zealand. So those are markets that are pretty wealthy with a business landscape, a social culture, whose population is mostly banked, where credit card penetration is high. And that's something they will not find in Indonesia. So Indonesia is a completely different market to the other markets they've served so far. The credit card penetration is low. The unbanked population is scaringly high. So it's something they need to maybe adapt to. They might need a different strategy to accommodate local payment methods, because Indonesia prefers bank transfers as opposed to credit card. So that's something maybe they're not used to. And maybe that's one of the reasons that it's taking them a while to come to Indonesia, because they need to understand and learn how Indonesia is different to the other markets.
Right, right. And I guess what's the next step for Stripe? Like, what will they have to do to actually gain a foothold in the Indonesian market and to be able to match up with the competition that's already been there?
Yeah, I think the first thing and probably the hardest thing is the regulation. If they manage to somehow get the license past Bank Indonesia, I think it wouldn't be too hard. Even though they have competition, I think Stripe has the experience and it has the know-how to gain a significant foothold in Indonesia. But the regulation is the big thing. And if they're looking to accelerate the process, I think maybe something, an investment or an acquisition could be on the cards for them. It's something they've done before. They've acquired a company in Nigeria and in Malaysia. I think they teamed up with another local company. So, no, partnerships, investments, acquisition is something they could do.
Right.
Especially if the regulations are increasingly difficult to get around, then that could be a realistic option for Stripe.
Right, right. And do we have an indication of how other global payments companies have managed to roll out their products in Indonesia to kind of see, you know, what Stripe's journey in the next few months or next few years would look like?
Yeah, the problem is there's not been any other payment companies that have managed to roll out, you know, directly in Indonesia. And that's probably not good news for Stripe. You know, we've seen PayPal, they haven't set up a business here. The most they've done is invested in Gojek, in GoPay actually. For Alipay, they teamed up with MTech to launch Dana, the e-wallet firm. So even they needed to team up with another company and go buy a completely different brand, not by the name of Alipay.
Right.
So for Stripe to roll out Stripe in Indonesia, I think it's probably a challenge, but yeah, we'll see.
Right, right. And you did mention how you reached out to Stripe, but they're not commenting on their Indonesian efforts right now, right?
Yes, they did respond and they did say that they are working to launch in Indonesia, but does not want to comment to make any statements at the moment. But I did see a comment by Onki, the head of Indonesia operations, saying that the company is doing beta testing in Indonesia at the moment. So I think that's where they're at the moment.
Right, right. And since they weren't so willing to comment so much on the specifics of their operations there, do you have any indication, I guess, from other payments players in Indonesia as to how Stripe's entry could potentially affect the payments landscape there in general? Like, will startups there eventually have a harder time operating because now there's a global incumbent in the market? Or is this actually just, you know, part of the course for being a payments business? Like, you have to expect just like massive competition.
Yeah, I think from talking to the other payment companies, I don't think it's something they're too worried about at the moment. Maybe something, it's not something they think will happen in the short term. I'm not sure, but I think it's just part and parcel of being a payment company. You know, there's going to be a competition, whether you like it or not, you know, whether it's from local giants or from international players, it's probably bound to happen at some point. So I think the big players in the market are probably well prepared for that.
Well, thanks so much, Adi.
Thank you. Thank you, Nat.
For stories on Stripe's foray into Indonesia and all the other various players within Asia's tech and startup space, visit techin.asia/sub to become a Tech in Asia subscriber. Either that or subscribe to this podcast where we're running deep dives every month. But that's it for this episode. Special thanks to Adi Wardana once again for joining me. Let me know if you liked it or if you have any particular stories you'd like to hear us talk about. Email me at podcast@techinasia.com or comment wherever you're listening from. I'd love to know what you think. Till next time, my name's Nat, and I'll see you in a few weeks.